thank you for joining us today. Representative Crummell is out with a rather grave situation with his mother's health. We are asked to remember him in our thoughts and in our prayers, and the Crummell family. In their hours of difficulty, as Representative Crummell is at the nursing home with his mother and the rest of the family. By way of announcements and housekeeping, today I am to remind you that next Thursday, 1 week from today, we've got an appointment at Wilson High School. I'll ask Representative Dingfelder when she arrives, but next Thursday afternoon from 3 to 5:30 to cover both the metropolitan area and the after hours, at least 30 minutes of after 5 o'clock work hour, an opportunity to move our committee up to the Wilson High School, where we will have staff and the rest of the system will be set up to accommodate our attendance for the House Committee on Education, jointly with the House Committee on Audits, meeting up at Portland. So you'll each have a copy of that coming to your office. Please try and arrange your schedules to accommodate our attendance, and we will have no meeting that morning on Thursday morning in order to accommodate our afternoon schedule. Colleagues, we've got the acronym PIG in here. This isn't my acronym PIG. This goes to Physicians Northwest something. This is for the tsunami relief, and I'm not sure what all of the issues are there, but they're gathering money for the Doctors Without Borders, or I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name.
Northwest Medical Team.
That's it. Okay, that's it. Northwest Medical Team. And finally, I'd like to welcome Don Grotting. Don, can you stand up? Thank you very much, Don. Don is from Ness, Oregon, and you folks that live over here in this valley see your constituents all the time. And when somebody comes all the way over here, and he heard that I would be chair today in lieu of Representative Crummell, so he came all the way over just to see me be chair today and to say really eloquent things about NISA and the Oregon's Teacher of the Year from NISA and all of the good things that we've got going on in Eastern Oregon, Southeastern Oregon. So welcome, Don, and we'll plan to visit with you and see you a little bit later on the floor of the House. This morning, we're going to take some high-level budget process discussions and relative to Oregon's entire budget process. The fact that we audit state agencies, it's thought that by the chair that we'd all also ought to take a look and audit our own budget process. And I would like to express my appreciation for Legislative Fiscal Officer of the state, Ken Rocco, for taking over the helm and doing a good job there. And so this morning we're going to go ahead and invite Ken to come forward and then we'll have some other folks. Ken, if you'd like to take 5 to 7 minutes with us and kind of give us a high-level overview, and then we'll probably ask you some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. I was asked just to give you an overview of the budget system before you get into the bills that you have scheduled for today. So what I have provided to you is a series of slides that are broken into six areas of the budget. I'm not going to go over every one of these slides. In fact, I'm probably not going over any of them. I'm just going to provide them to you as reference material. Most of these were presented to the Interim Committee on General Government and Operations, I believe it was called. So they've been before some of the members of the body already. And really, these are just to give you an overview of how the budget system in Oregon works and the cycle that we go through. I think a lot of the frustration that people have about the budget process comes from a lack of knowledge and understanding of how it works currently. And perhaps we haven't done a very good job of explaining that to people. So hopefully you'll get some information out of these slides. And if you have any questions after you look at them and you want us to come back, me or somebody from my office can come back and go into more depth with you. I would just like to make three comments about the budget process and the budget in general that I don't know are widely understood. First, the budget is a plan for expenditures. It's not an accounting document. I think the budget should focus on getting performance out of agencies. It shouldn't worry about how many pens an agency purchases. That's an audit function. I think the budget should look at results and the performance of an agency. And if the agencies are meeting those performance results, then there should be less concern about getting into the details of their budget. If that isn't happening, of course, then you go in and you look at why an agency isn't performing. And then you may determine at that time they are spending too much on pens or not serving enough people. But I think the budget is only a plan, and it should be focused on the results that you want out of an agency. Secondly, I think the budget process needs to be flexible in order to allow the legislature to deliver the services that Oregonians want. The more sideboards you put to the process, the more constraints you put on it, it limits your flexibility in delivering services as needs change and as the environment changes. So I think in some cases, putting up these restrictions causes more difficulty to the elected officials. And then finally, the budget is a political exercise. It's not just a technical document. Budget staff from the executive branch or the legislative branch can deliver you a perfectly technically accurate budget. That's easy. The difficult part is when you have to make choices about where resources go. Who wins in the budget, who loses? That's the difficult part. And that's when the budget becomes less of a technical document and more of a political document. So with those comments, I would just like to point you to some of the slides that I brought for you. The first, on page 2, the first one is just outlines Oregon's budget policy, and you can find this in ORS 291-200, where it's specifically stated this is a summary of the budget policy principles of the state of Oregon. The next several slides go through a budget, what we call a budget 101, that just describes the budget process, the timing of it. It talks about appropriation bills and other items like that. If you want to, I think one of the more useful slides on top of page 4 talks about how the legislature appropriates money, allocates money, we limit other funds and federal funds because in budget terminology, those funds are in continuously appropriated accounts, which means the legislature limits the ability of an agency to spend money from those accounts. And that's what you'll hear expenditure limitation a lot, and that's what that refers to. At the bottom of page 4 and page 5 are some slides that provide you with some of the terminology that we use. We budget by object or category. And these are the categories that we use: personal services, services and supplies, special payments, capital outlay, capital improvement, and construction, and then debt service. Now, within those, the budget has details below those lines. For example, in services and supplies, the budget goes down into specific categories such as travel, office supplies. Below that, the accounting records come into play. So you can actually get into actual purchases, but the budget doesn't really look at that level of detail.
Ken, how much of this is online now?
Not much is online, actually. I think there are some summary reports. Most of the performance measure data is online, or all of it is online. Most of the budget detail is not online unless an individual agency decides to put it out online.
Of the 100 agencies approximately in the state of Oregon, do any of them actually publish the majority of their budget information?
I think several publish, Mr. Chair, several publish summaries of their information. But the more detailed data is probably not published. Mr. Chair, either to DAS or to my office. Because I think if you come into our office and look at some of these budget books that are produced, some of them are very thick books, and they have a lot of detail in them. I think the state is moving towards publishing more of this and making it available online.
Okay.
And I think perhaps with our new budgeting system, which is the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System, or otherwise known as ORBITS, will make publishing of some of this material online much easier. Beginning on the bottom of page six, and then for a number of several pages after that, is just this current cycle that we go through in the budget process. And I don't know if there's many months in the two-year biennium where budgeting isn't going on, because as soon as the legislature leaves after session, agencies start reconciling what the legislature did and implementing that, putting that into their budget documentation, and then soon after that they start developing the budget for the next two-year cycle. So budgeting is always going on.
You find, Ken, that with agencies use a budget and a variance amount in that process? Do they plug in their budgets of the amounts that have been budgeted, and then they work off of a diminution of that amount using a periodic tables and variances of that, or do they get that sophisticated?
Mr. Chair, what the system right now requires an agency to develop a quarterly plan on spending their allocated monies or appropriated funds, and that money is released to them or authorized to them on a quarterly basis by the Department of Administrative Services, and so that's called the allotment process, which is also specified in statute. So immediately agencies start developing that quarterly plan so they can see how they are going to distribute their funds over the 24-month period.
Yes, Representative Dingfelder is recognized.
Thank you. I have a question about, and it's the bottom of page six, the slide, when you're talking about the budget cycle, and seeing that we are a rare entity and being one of the few states that still does a biennial budget, and it's interesting to see that of the seven states that actually do it, in essence, only three are truly doing a biennial budget. I'm assuming you've done a lot of analysis on this for Oregon. I know it's come up many times, but as far as our ability to really, you know, project and adapt to changes, do you feel that it's time that Oregon seriously looked at an annual budget, and you think that would help us in our process, given how many factors we have to deal with that change rather rapidly today?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we have heard anecdotally that some states are thinking about going more to a biennial approach. It's not, a lot of it depends on the size of the state and the budget amounts that are appropriated for each period. We've considered things like annual appropriations, perhaps within a two-year budget period, looking at maybe the state of Washington model, where they budget biennially, basically, but they have an annual reconciliation. The second year, they have a reconciliation-type budget where they come in for a brief period of time and they can make adjustments to the budget or deal with other issues that have come up. Oregon is also unique in our biennial budget in that we have an entity called the Emergency Board, which meets periodically during the interim and deals with a lot of unanticipated events that have happened that affect the budget. And the legislature has tended to use the emergency board as a budget control entity by appropriating funds to that emergency board and then allowing the board itself to allocate funds after certain conditions are met. So we have a sort of a hybrid process that makes our biennial budget a little easier to deal with, I think.
A follow-up?
Follow-up. Representative Dinkfelder.
Thank you. And you raise a good point. I mean, I certainly understand the role of the emergency board, and I think that's something we should evaluate because, obviously, it's not a full representation of the legislature, and they are making some serious policy decisions. And I don't know if there's any attempt now to look at, you know, going to an annual or maybe similar to the Washington model. The thing that disturbs me is when I look at North Dakota and Wyoming, they have much smaller populations and much smaller budgets. And that, you know, now we're probably getting, 3.5 million people in the state and our budget is growing. So I think it's something we certainly should look at as an option. So it's more of a comment than a question.
Certainly. Representative Dinkfelder, and I would submit to you that the allotment process by the quarterly allotments forces everyone to work into each budget gets divided up into 2 years and then into four pieces, you know, within those 2 years, so within each of the 2 years. So, as Mr. Rock has indicated, you know, there isn't any month that we're not working on budgets, either historical or current or future budgets. So it's a, but you're right. There's a question whether or not we'd ought to examine the possibility of making it more efficient and more effective. Please continue, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Beginning on those pages go through the cycle that typically is used. On the bottom of page 12, or actually the top of page 13, there's some couple slides on budget preparation. Basically, when the governor starts this process in March of an even-numbered year by putting out budget instructions that detail the process for agencies to follow over the next two-year cycle. There's a couple examples of forms that we use to build the budget. These are just the initial forms that include what we call essential packages, and the essential packages are not, they don't exist because you have to fund them. It's just that they are built on the basis of cost factors that are either like inflation, growth, roll-up of positions that were only partially funded in the previous biennium, or mandated caseload kinds of issues. So those are built in to the budget. And we do this to get to what we now call an essential budget level, which is basically the same as the former current service level. And there's a lot of misunderstanding of what that means. All that is an estimate of what it would take to continue all of the previously enacted legislation of the state, given increases in inflation and mandated caseloads. It doesn't guarantee a level of funding. It's just a goalpost. And if we wouldn't calculate that, the first question we would get when session started would be, how much does it cost to continue everything we've done? What is the hole we're in to continue that? So that is why that is calculated. And it's also a statutory requirement that it be calculated.
Ken, we're going to have to wrap up here in a hurry. You want to say some parting words? I've got one question for you when you do.
All I'd like to point out is that at the end of this presentation, the slides, there are some examples of other systems that are in effect, including zero-based budgeting. In Oregon, again, we have a hybrid system. We have a piece of all four of the major types of budgeting systems. And one of the slides shows you where those are in Oregon law, where you can find those directives to the budget process.
Ken, in terms of sheer quantity of budget revision legislative proposals that you see, who proposes more revisions in the budget process, legislative members who serve on Ways and Means or legislative members who do not serve on Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, it would be members who do not serve on Ways and Means.
Thank you. I suspicioned that, but I've never really heard that. So thank you very much. Members, do you have questions of Mr. Rocco? Yes, Representative Rosenfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, you know, there's been a lot of talk this session about priority-based budgeting, and I don't see that listed as one of the alternate systems. Does that correspond to one of these that's listed here, or is that something different?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I would characterize it as a performance-based system because basically that's what you're looking at is performance. We have tried this time to tie prioritization of programs to performance measures in agency budgets, so I think it's just related to that one. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Representative Dingfelder is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can this sort of, is this, it's a question about when we talk about the budget, and you had mentioned that a lot of people don't understand our budget, and one of the first things that I do whenever I talk to any group is explain our budgeting process and just give them a better sense of where their tax dollars are going. And almost always people are really surprised. I mean, you know, they don't really make the distinction between federal and state. But one thing that I found is very few people understand the other part of our budget, which is tax expenditures. And I didn't see it anywhere in your slides, and that's where, as you know, we 55 cents out of every dollar is going to tax expenditures. Do you have any thoughts about how we can review those, maybe look at them in the same manner that we review our budget using any one of these four alternative budget systems? Or,
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I believe in some years, session years, the revenue committees look at tax expenditures. I know several years ago they had a series of meetings looking at reviewing the entire set of expenditures, and those are also required under state law to be published by along with the governor's budget. So there is a volume out that's about this thick about tax expenditures. I don't typically, those are not in the Ways and Means Committee's purview. They're usually looked at in the Revenue Committee because we consider them to be revenue, diverted revenue or lost revenue to the state because they're primarily tax credits. So typically Ways and Means doesn't look at that. I think you might want to check with the Legislative Revenue Office to see what kind of review they do of those.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. And I did that and had quite an interesting conversation with your counterpart, Mr. Warner, and basically we don't really do performance standards or true accounting or audits of these tax expenditures, which is somewhat disturbing to me. So I just wanted to see if on your side if you had any thoughts on that. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we do not take an active role in that, but that's a very good point you've made.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ken. We'll invite Jason Williams to come forward, and then let's see, John Charles, Cascade Policy, and let's see, someone here from CSE.
Chair Butler.
Okay. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. You have a couple of people with you, Jason. Go right ahead. And we've already spent a goodly portion of time, so we're going to have 5 minutes for each of the following.
Okay.
Any questions? It's my fault. I was asking the questions.
I have a question for you. I'm just writing this out.
Chair Butler, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us today. I have one of the Taxpayer Association and one of our friends and co-authors of our 175 Ways to Balance the Budget, which you guys should have gotten a few last week, but I'll pass out another copy here. And also a very important government researcher, Paul Knoble, here with me today. We talk about how Oregon does need budget reform. And when we released this report, 175 Ways to Balance the Budget, we took some of the ideas, great ideas from last session that just didn't get enough momentum, some of the ideas from this session, and some of the ideas that we called all 50 governor's offices. We wanted to find out what works or what are they thinking about so we can get ahead of the curve on some of the great reform ideas. And we feel like this state can really get a lot by being more aggressive at finding government efficiencies and becoming more effective in what works. And also, with some of the bills that are on the docket here today, it is interesting. It kind of gets us into the planning phase, saying, like, well, what can we do to help plan even for next session? And in the 2001 session, we had an idea for a government efficiency officer that out of the some 50,000-plus state employees, there ought to be one person who's looking out just for the effectiveness and efficiency for all the agencies and finding out how technology can help, the, you know, cross agencies and whatnot. And, boy, and of course, you know, that idea just didn't get anywhere in 2001, but it would have really been nice to have that officer because, as we know, in 2001 was right when the recession hit, and that's right when the budget process and all the special sessions happened, and we seem to be balancing the budget through a crisis rather than planning ahead and doing a better job of it. And one of the ideas that I think would be helpful is transparency. And we commend the governor for putting the governor's budget on the internet, but the next step is for a more detailed budget. The Department of Transportation, which is $2.8 billion, only has 8.5 pages dedicated to it. And the Natural Resources, which is half the size, has three times as many pages. And when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars going to a program and it's not showing up on the budget, you know, we got to ask ourselves, like, how can taxpayers, we want to be a part of this process, balance the budget? We want to be able to have a chance to help you guys, and we want to have, you know, experts and people in the private industry to come in and help balance the budget, but we need to have a transparent system. And in conclusion, there's kind of six principles that I think that would be good goalposts for us. One is the budget transparency. The more open, the more we can show the true cost of government services. Number two, we're changing the way the budget is reported, and this gets back to showing the cost, not just listing what it's spending on, but, you know, how much does it cost to deliver a welfare benefit, or how much does it cost to fix a pothole? And within that, figure out, well, if it costs this much, why? Do a breakdown. Once you see the true cost of government and the service, we can find out what agencies are doing fantastic and which ones need improvement. We can also compare ourselves from state to state. Prioritization and elimination, idea four, innovations from other states being, let's find out what's working, and not just in other states, but around the world. Innovations from our public employees. Number five, here's an example where I think we need to do a better job of empowering our public employees to get their viewpoint about what needs to happen. And I'm reminded about what happened in Arizona with their family services, where they were on the bottom of child support collection in other areas. And because they were standing out so poorly, they really did a whole reform in their department. And one of the things that they did is they asked them, says, well, can you list all the steps you have to do in order to get your job done? And, of course, you know, there was like 50 or some steps or whatever. And they listed, and when they did that, they also listed which ones they thought were unnecessary. And that allowed, you know, the legislature and everyone and the administrators to come in and remove steps that were not important. And I would love to see that happen here in Oregon. If there is, if there's a process and too many, you know, burdens and qualifications and whatever bureaucracy, let's allow our public employees to identify what they want to change. You know, as long as it helps to protect the service on and the quality at the end and helps actually make it run more effective, the more the better. And finally, innovations from the private sector through privatization. And there are private firms out there that specialize in this. They can take almost every area of government and help show on how you can privatize it or help get outside contractors, things to help make it even run more smoothly. And I think that's going to be one of the key for the successes. And with that, I will allow my other compatriots to speak.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, excuse me. I'm Wayne Brady, and I had some of the same ideas as Jason, but one of the things that concerns me is that there are certain built-in structural problems in the state and in the school system that are driving costs faster than the economy is growing. We all know about the PERS problem, which, you know, even after the reforms that were done last session, the PERS costs are still going up at a rate we can't sustain for long. And the schools, there's sort of a disconnect because you folks provide the money and they sort of independently, for instance, contract with the teachers union on wages and salaries and so on. And so they don't really have as strong an incentive as they might have to hold down costs, because they're just coming to you and filling in the gap, whatever it is. If they had a fixed top line that they had to live within, and then they would be stronger negotiators and maybe more aggressive in cost savings and other areas. So I think these structural things are something we need to look at throughout state government, things that are driving the costs and sort of out of control. And so we need to maybe have a little bit more, Jason was mentioning, a better insight into where the money is going.
Excellent. Thank you, Wayne.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Knobel. I've been working on a project for a couple of years now called, I have a website highlighting some of the proposed changes called The Government of Tomorrow. And it's at abcgov.com, and one of the kind of searched around the whole world to see what was being done better, what governments are working, and my theory is that find out what's being done well and replicate it if you can, and see if it applies to your situation and see if it can be done. And one of the models that I highlighted on the site was something I thought was a fantastic experiment done in the city of Indianapolis in the 90s under former Republican Mayor Stephen Goldsmith. When Mayor Goldsmith ran for office before 92, he ran on a platform of, and it was kind of a half joke, but he had a point to it, of having three employees in the city. He'd lay off everybody. The only people that would be left would be the mayor, city manager, and a bid coordinator. And his idea was that the government could be done cheaper by outside companies. When he came to office, he realized a different dynamic happened. He thought that it could be done cheaper by going outside, but he realized after talking to the union and the AFSCME, the head of AFSCME there, that there was a better way to do it. And what he was looking for to achieve wasn't to go outside, but to create a competitive environment. And in creating competition, the union decided to get involved in that competition. So they went about challenging the mayor. The unions have always historically said that we can compete with anybody, given not being hindered by shackles of bureaucracy and whatnot. And their bureaucracy and what they were hindered with in the union was mid-level managers over them that were paper pushers, pushing regulations and rules and not necessarily being effective in the operation itself. So they went about establishing kind of a groundbreaking process where competition became the norm. One by one, they took departments and put in this competition where AFSCME and the union would bid against private companies. And the amazing thing about it was that the union could win, variably win. They won about 80% of the bids. And what we found out from that experiment was that government workers could do a good job, especially when they're listened to, and that the mid-level supervisors that were in there, part of this experiment required that the mayor have to be challenged to not keep those people on board, a lot of patronage positions. Some of the people that helped him get elected in the first place, he had to get rid of. That's what the union said to him and challenged him in order to have a competitive structure and to have the cost down where they could compete. So it became a win-win, and I know it's been percolating around here in the building a little bit, some of this experiment, and the AFSCME union even has cut an 18-minute video promoting the system. The net result of it was that after 8 years of administration and two terms, the last budget of the mayor's was less in real dollars than the first. There were three property tax cuts, and with about a $470 million annual budget, he was able to squeeze out an extra $1 billion in rebuilding the infrastructure of the city, where previous mayors had no money left over for infrastructure rebuilding. So it was an experiment that really proved itself successful. And the starting point in it, and really needing to know, when he first took office, he didn't know how much the services cost. How much did it cost to pave a mile of road? How much did it cost to fill a pothole? Nobody could answer that question for him. They had these beautiful four-color pie charts and award-winning budgets, but those budgets didn't tell basic information of how much did it cost for the services of government, what was the unit cost to do those services. So the first thing that he needed to establish, and he worked with KPMG, brought in from the outside, to start an activity-based model of costing. And I think that that's the one thing that the state of Oregon could do best in moving towards performance-based budgeting. I think it's inevitable that performance-based budgeting is going to happen. It's just a question of when, not if. It just makes too much sense to evaluate how well an agency is doing, what services are being provided. But right now, I venture to say you can't even determine what services are being provided by any given department you might name. You bring a department head and ask them to enumerate and list the services they actually do. They won't be able to do it. In the state of Washington, they funded a study in fish and wildlife to actually do an activity-based model to determine what functions are being done. And that took them about a year just to break down and say what they're actually doing within the department. And I'm still not quite, haven't got a clear answer. It's supposed to have been done now, what's actually transpired with that experiment. But we need to know what services that each department is performing, and then the unit cost to do those things. What a valuable tool for legislators evaluating a budget in a committee to see what those costs are and to know what services are being provided and be able to question them. So I'd say, just in closing, rather than look at the zero-based budgeting model, I think a performance-based budgeting with activity-based costing is a far superior way to go, because it actually shows you in black and white, shows the legislators, shows citizens what's being spent, how it's being spent, and then follow that up with how well it's being spent in creating criteria to evaluate the performance of those departments and those services being performed.
Thank you, Paul. And Paul, I just say this, that had we not had the folks from AFSCME and the other union folks to help us get through the crisis in 2002, to help us determine what things we could do and what things we had to do, then we probably just would not have made it. So I think that's an important thing, and I would ask you, if you would please, to maybe offer that suggestion to Representative Donna Nelson, that perhaps she's anxious about overhead costs and the determination of overhead costs. If perhaps someone could stop by her office and maybe bring the AFSCME folks, because they helped us with some of the overhead issues out of our prison in Eastern Oregon and in Nyhere County. So, and they were able to help us to determine that we had a layer of administration that we really didn't need, and we found that we could do some cuts and still maintain the safety of our employees, as well as taking care of the prison issues that we had at hand. So, other questions perhaps from the members? Thank you very much, Shannon. Thank you, Paul, Wayne.
Thank you.
Jason. Brainstorm Magazine has the article about the 175 ways down.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, Jason. Each received that. And then John Charles, and then someone from Citizens for a Sound Economy.
I don't see John in the audience.
John Charles couldn't make it.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. And no one from CSE, so with that, we'll go ahead and close that portion of the public hearing of invited testimony regarding the budget process from a high level. And I'm going to go ahead now and open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution Number 2. And we invite Senator John Lim to the podium. Jim?
Thank you, sir. Right on.
And colleagues, let me just make an announcement by way of general announcement. That is that we're going to go ahead and move House Bill 2235 and 2239 forward to the Tuesday, and we'll post those for public hearing on the Tuesday session.
HCR 2 establishes a joint committee on legislative efficiency.
Okay. You want to go ahead?
Representative Lim?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Butler, and members of the committee, and thank you very much for inviting me here, and also thank you again calling me Senator, even though I'm a representative.
I apologize.
Either way, that's fine with me.
Actually, Senator Lim, I'm going to tell a story on you. Senator Lim said, somebody called him Senator Lim in a meeting. He said, no, I should call you Representative. I should call you by your highest title, shouldn't I? And John said, Representative Lim said, that'd be Dad.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. I just heard the testimony that the previous the people, how the government could run effectively and efficiently. And I think it's about time to look at that issue after more than 150 years of our state, the government. The first place, usually legislators asking each government agencies to look into save the dollars and streamlining. We do all those things by action, by the legislative proceeding. But at the same time, I think it's about time to look at ourselves, the legislature itself. How could we make our legislative process and could make it better? I think we need to begin with us first before we ask any other agency. Because of that idea, I came up the House Concurrent Resolution 2. The content is very much self-explanatory. Each legislative session, we spent significant public tax dollars to manage the legislative process. We, as a legislative member, often pressure, I think I'm restating again, out of this context, state and other government entities to be wiser with public dollars, but we rarely ask ourselves to do the same. I'm also aware that legislative leadership has appointed new public commissions on Oregon legislature to develop recommendations for improving the operations of the legislative branch. However, that the legislative leadership appropriated without the legislative process that appointed 36 members to spend $150,000 to have a public hearing statewide and then get some community ideas how the government and the legislatures could improve better. My HCR2 simply doing it with least expenses, possibly no expenses, since already legislators, we are getting paid, even though it's a smaller amount, and also per diem, when we have a meeting, we shall be able to do it ourselves. And even when we are drafting bills, sometimes 10, 20, 30 people working on almost the same issue, same bill, without knowing other members what they are doing. And when drafting a bill, it's going to cost hundreds, if not $1,000s, to draft the bill. I think it is our responsibility to save the tax dollars best way we can to make our legislative bodies more efficient and more effective. And since I served as a state legislature since 1993, even I saw one session, all of the committee members, both House and Senate, completely divided, spending more time. It is more difficult to have a good process. I think some of the committees of our legislature, I believe, like their ways and means, it should be combined together. Even though I'm a member of a Trade and Economic Committee and a chairperson of that committee, by the statute, we're supposed to have a joint committee. But even this session alone is divided. I believe it's about time to look into what we are doing and make our process more efficient and time-saving and make it better.
Representative Lim, that would require that may involve the suggestion of this committee, the Joint Legislative Committee on Legislative Efficiency. They may make a suggestion. It's possible that they could suggest that all committees be joined. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I have no objection to it. When I was drafting this bill, I didn't know already legislators have that commission. But I just found out it yesterday, since I have not served the last session. And so maybe with this committee, with my bill, might be able to work together. But my bill is mandate from the legislative process through this HCR 2, but the commission's leadership created is created by the leadership, not the legislative action. That's the two differences. And so that will be my conclusion of my testimony.
Thank you.
And any questions?
Thank you, Representative Lim. Questions of Representative Lim on House Concurrent Resolution Number 2.
Well,
you must have got it all explained.
I think. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other testimony from anyone in the audience signed up on House Concurrent Resolution 2?
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Lake.
Thank the Chair and members of the committee.
We will close the public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution Number 2. We'll now open a public hearing on House Bill 2384. Is that the order that we're in?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right for me.
Yeah, let me just thank you very much. 2384. Great. Okay, please.
House Bill 2384 requires the overhead to be shown as a separate item in the state budget report. Prohibits the governor from recommending and the legislature from approving an agency budget that authorizes expenditures for overhead of more than 15% of their budget.
And we have two people signed up. Great. Welcome. Good morning. Go ahead and enter and sign in, if you would, please.
Good morning. My name is Jackie Howard. I work for Representative Nelson. She had a family emergency last night and was not able to be here this morning. David is an intern in her office, and he will be reading the written testimony for House Bill 2384, and I'll be reading one for 2385.
Thank you very much. Let's do this. We'll go ahead and Jackie, have you read yours. We'll open a public hearing on 2385 in just a moment. So we'll start with David.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is David Gulliver from the Office of Representative Nelson. The budgeting process at the legislature continues to be void of certain actual, factual, contractual data that needs to be broken out and that is of primary importance in budget conciliation. No private business of the size of our state business would avoid the determination and disclosure of overhead in its budgeting approval process. Yet, we continue to eliminate this requirement from accountability as we pass budgets financed by our citizen shareholders. I believe we must change the as-usual budgeting process in order to, first, compare the burden of the management, administrative, non-operational costs to the costs of running the operating entity, for instance, the Department of Education to schools. Second, verify that the bulk of our funding goes to those programs at service delivery sites rather than at Capitol headquarters, far from those in need of services. For example, at county distribution points rather than at the Department of Human Services. Third, ascertain the overhead costs that are essential to the conduit of quality services, priced right, properly spread, and can be paid for by the funding sources without the demise of quality of service delivery. For instance, costly real estate, high consultant and management salaries paid rather than the provisioning for local personnel critical to our actual clients' well-being. And finally, determine if bulk purchasing is more economical and efficient than local purchasing of equipment and supplies at the service delivery point. For instance, schools and program centers purchasing from mandated vendors rather than from local vendors. In budgeting practicality, considering state agency overhead may result in cost reductions and or reappropriation to the operating entities located at client delivery sites. It will also likely reduce or eliminate redundant personnel responsibilities and allow for streamlining at the agency level, much like that of the regulatory streamlining that is currently under process for businesses in Oregon. Let's pass House Bill 2384 onto the full House and Senate, whose approvals will yield us information whereby state business is held as accountable as private business. After all, this is our people's business. As an example, do we need a Department of Education in Washington, D.C.? To many of us, that's overhead. Do we need that overhead burden, or do our children need textbooks in local classrooms? State government needs to ask the same type of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, David. Are there questions, I guess, David, are you going to take questions on behalf of Representative Nelson that we may be able to send back to her?
I'll be able to report back to the representative and bring answers to you promptly.
Okay. Are there questions that any of you would like to make through to Representative Nelson through her staff member, David Gulliver? Question of administrative staff here. Do we have any concept? Has anyone indicated to you, Jim, how this communication of the overhead as a separate item is either calculated and then how it's reported back to the legislature?
No, sir.
Okay. Did the good representative, Dave, and that would be a question, I guess, back to you, would be if the good representative from District 24 had some idea how this would be done in the Ways and Means process, communicated through the, it would have to come from the Department of Administrative Services back to legislative fiscal, back to the legislature, so that there was a communication, and then that any adjustments or questions of it would have to go back to that same chain in reverse, I would think. So it's just a mechanics issue. I'd like to have a better feel for the mechanics of what Representative Nelson would be asking for.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll bring this question to the representative's attention and get you an answer as quickly as possible.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. At this time, I'm going to appoint the members that are present a subcommittee of the committee.
Oh, okay.
And we will now go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2384, and the subcommittee of the committee will open a public hearing and for testimony on House Bill 2385. Jim?
Yes, sir. House Bill 2385 creates a task force on zero-based budgeting, directs the task force to study the Department of Human Services and Economic and Community Development Department to determine the effect of zero-based budget, appropriates funds to the Department of Administrative Services for expenses incurred by the task force, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? All right. And let's see. Jackie, we're going to invite you to give testimony on behalf of the good representative from House District 24.
Thank you, Chair Butler and committee member. For written testimony, in 2001, a bipartisan bill for zero-based budgeting with performance measurement passed the House Committee, full House, and Senate Committee. Unfortunately, the bill did not get its final hearing in the Senate. This concept was a smart and popular undertaking then, and it still is. Until we legislators apply the principles of zero-based budgeting together with performance criteria to our state's various agency budgets, we will not be certain of our budgeting process is being thoroughly justified, understood, and worthy of our taxpayers' fiscal burdens. For this reason, I urge you to pass this bill to give a task force the chance over the interim to determine the zero-based principles and procedures, apply these principles prudently to the fiscal matters of one large agency and one smaller agency, and report to the full legislature on the merits and or demerits of the process and its findings. The task force with members' representation, as stated in Section 1, will be able to justify every dollar in the two agencies' budgets, verify overhead of the agencies, and justify or eliminate costs by program through consideration of performance standards and or needs. By undertaking the zero-based approach, we will no longer be subject to current service level budgeting, less 10% or increase by indices. Financing an agency's existence will be approved through the scrutiny of need, cost justification, and the value of the service meeting the need. Please give House Bill 2385 your aye vote.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Questions for the representative through the good representative from House District 24 for that could be passed through Jackie. Jackie, did you receive a copy of the February 17th report from Ken Rocco, legislative fiscal officer for the state this morning?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Could you perhaps take that back to Representative Nelson? There is, to the representative, the good representative, please. There is a section that in the overall budgeting process there, towards the back of the document, I think it's on page 21, that refers to reforms relating to zero-base performance, and Representative Dingfelder had questioned prioritization budgeting, program-based budgeting, and other resource-based budgeting. I would like to have the representative have an opportunity to review that material, and then if the good representative would then get back with the chair, either Chair Kremel or myself, with her ideas relative to how we could coordinate those activities with representative or with the legislative fiscal office, so that the members of the Ways and Means process can work through that. I'm going to state for the record that I have spent my earlier life in this building in the Ways and Means process. For the record, we're going to come back in as a committee as opposed to a subcommittee now, and continue to receive testimony on this public hearing. But I was stating that I had previously worked in Ways and Means, and we did some exercises in zero-based budgeting. And one thing that is happening in that whole process is there's a change in culture that's going to be changing right now and will necessarily have to be changed in that process in order to continue to move forward with any kind of significant budget revision. And it just doesn't happen at the speed of light. I think I actually was privileged to hear the very first zero-based budgets offered, and they were just segments of some departments is what they were. I was aghast at the fact that some department heads, big department heads, transportation, for instance, didn't, and that's not to besmirch the current director of transportation, but just tell you that the former director of transportation just said zero budgeting doesn't work for us. So anyway, there's a culture change that's occurring, and it's necessary in order to move that direction. And if the good representative from District 24 would kindly take this information, have an opportunity to review it, and then go together with our legislative fiscal officers and either Officer Ken Rocco or I think Larry Neischwander would be available, and certainly those budget officers in that end of the building who have had experiences with the various kinds of budget attempts could kind of give the lay of the land and show how the minefield is laid out, so that the good representative can kind of get an idea as to how. I'm most interested in implementation. Not that the idea isn't any good, because I believe it is good. It's how we would implement it, and I'm not certain that we've found the key to open the door just yet. So, okay. With that, are there other questions? Yes, Representative Dingfelder is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I had to go out and nature called. I apologize for missing the testimony, but I was reading through the bill last night, and you probably heard my questions about tax expenditures to Ken Rocco, and that's something I've been very interested in. Have read through all 352 tax expenditure reviews, and somebody told me the other day I need to get a life, but I think it's really important that we do make sure that we're spending taxpayer money wisely. So I guess I would pose to you, when I read through your bill, if you think that having zero-based budgeting for tax expenditures might be a wise addition to this task force, in that as we are also very concerned about spending taxpayer money wisely for agency budgets, I think looking at your proposed bill, that it might be a good opportunity to also look at zero-based budgeting for tax expenditures. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I can pass your concerns on to Representative Nelson and have her get back to you.
Okay, I appreciate that. And it's more of a request, because, and as the chair knows, I've been looking into this, and I think we need to make sure that we're meeting performance measures for tax expenditures, for how we set policy through that aspect of spending taxpayer money, in the same way that we need to make sure that our agencies are meeting performance standards in the programs that they implement. So I'd certainly encourage Representative Nelson to look into that as part of this bill.
I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Dingfelder, I think that you may have hit a nerve with Ken Rocco this morning.
Not that
it was a bad thing. I think that he was receptive to the concept, and because we have folks right now in legislative fiscal office who have tuned their ear to performance measurements and outcome-based measurements, mm-hmm. I think that it would be very important for you to follow up on that particular issue with legislative fiscal office and get with those people who do that and begin to explore that policy. That could certainly be either a committee bill in this committee or a committee bill in revenue. At that particular point. Again, I'm interested in the mechanics of how we get the job done. And right now, the measurements are all outputs. They're not outcomes. They just say, we've got 50 people that use this particular item, and the amount is blank. And we don't measure, that's just an output. It's not an outcome. Is it really, what is the social and socioeconomic reason that we have that particular credit? Is it accomplishing exactly what, in other words, is the interest deduction on a second home giving us whatever it is that we really wanted to have? More second homes in Oregon? Or what's the socioeconomic reason of having it? Not just the fact that it was federal policy, therefore it ought to be state policy.
And Mr. Chair, if I may just add to your comments, and I really appreciate that. And I'm fairly new to the Ways and Means process and the auditing process, and I have to say that I've really been learning a lot and serving on both, although I'm serving on one as a volunteer, has been really interesting, because it's brought up a lot of questions. And one of the things is, you know, in the Ways and Means process, we require the agencies to come in front of us every 2 years and basically state their case and say, yes, here's what we've been doing for the past 2 years, here's what we've accomplished, is it working? And I do agree, I think we need a better measure, and I do think performance standards are the way to go. But then I started thinking, well, why don't we do the same thing with the tax expenditures, because that's just as big a part, if not more, of our budget as the agency spending. So it's more, $27 billion actually versus $12 billion, but that includes also the connection to the federal tax code, as the chair knows very well as a CPA. So I would just encourage the good representative to consider that. I'd certainly support it, and probably many members of this committee would as well.
Thank you, Representative Dingfelder. And I'm going to, while I've got Representative Nelson's staff here, I'm going to remind you that we were talking about the overhead issues earlier this morning, and I really would encourage the representative relative to the overhead items to please get together with the and I'm going to give a personal recommendation that she get together with Mary Botkin from AFSCME, because these folks are in possession of much greater knowledge than what we've ever previously given them credit for. And they are not just stakeholders in the matter, they're our partners, they're our delivery partners. And I just would make that recommendation that before we see the overhead bill, I think it was 2384, before we see that come back, I would really like to have, and perhaps maybe that's another person that should testify on behalf of what's available to us as a resource. These folks already work for us. They work for us in all agencies of the state. AFSCME represents folks in virtually every spot in the state in one place or another. So I would encourage the senator or the representative to please link up with those folks and bring joint testimony back. I think you get a lot more traction too.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Other questions for that we need to pass on through to the good representative from House District 24 through her staff. Okay. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2385. Ladies and gentlemen, we still have some time, but we had previously told the folks on 2235 and 2239 that we would push over on their particular bills to Tuesday, if that's all right. And I just hope that we can just play this by ear from this point forward as a result of the chair's family matters, personal issues of being away from the session. We remember the Carmel family in our thoughts and in our prayers today. With that, colleagues, we're going to go ahead and close House Audit Committee for today. Thank you very much for your attention.